Welcome to the Financial Coconut Podcast Network, the leading personal finance podcast network in Singapore. I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut. Every Thursday, you will finally get to chill with us. Hosted by Andrew, we will be bringing on some of the quirkiest, geekiest, leading voices in the personal finance space to give them ample time to talk about their story, the lessons they have learned over time, and some good advice for all of us. No longer the short and quick stuff. So sit back and chill with TFC.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's how you put a lot of emphasis on, okay, if I'm going to offer you a dish, let me find out what are the things you like first. You
okay,
know?
Do you like something savory?
Yeah,
what's your mood for today?
Okay. So that first understanding what they need, what they want, is so important. And that's why we put so much emphasis on that.
Hello and welcome to Chill with TFC, where we sit down with geeky and quirky individuals to learn about how they do this thing called money and life. My name is Andrew, and today we have an expert on love. Yes, this is the Financial Coconut, but we're going to talk about love and money. Violet is the founder of Lunch, actually. You would have seen her on media and heard about Lunch, actually, a matchmaking service that's been in Singapore for 18 years. We talk about what do people look out for in their partner and how does it change over the generations. Listen to some interesting and funny stories about dates that didn't go so well. And we discuss the role of money in making a relationship work out for the long term. Also, Violet is on our Mandarin show, Li Cai Oh Yeah, recently, and so you can check it out as well.
We have Darren and Sakura from Dare to Finance, which makes for a very interesting acronym.
Yeah, right? Yes.
No, because if you check out their IG page, you can see this very cute logo, and then with and it says DTF.
That's right.
Dare to Finance, guys. By the way, I'll be thinking of Ding Tai Fung.
Definitely, that's what we're thinking about too.
Yeah, Ding Tai Fung can sponsor this episode if you want.
Reach out to us.
Yeah, DTF, Dare to Finance. So tell us a bit about Dare to Finance and tell us a bit about yourselves, Darren.
So hi everyone, I'm Darren, the co-founder of Dare to Finance. I'm also a financial advisor, so I actually am the one behind creating all the content and also building the software side of the fintech arm that we are building on.
Yeah, so originally we started off as an Instagram page, right? Dare to Finance. Thereafter, we moved into giving out financial services because Darren started off as a financial service consultant. Thereafter, I joined early this year. So that is one of our services that we do provide. Thereafter, we also expanded into our fintech arm. So that's our software side. So that was what Darren was talking about. Yeah. And by the way, I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Sakura.
Yeah, just Sakura. And I have to ask you about your name.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of people ask me about my name, right? My mom is Japanese, and so that explains my name, Sakura. And then my dad is Singaporean Chinese. So yeah, but I always grew up here, so I feel very Singaporean.
Rooted in Singapore.
Yeah, my accent is definitely Singaporean as well.
Yeah, sounds like so, it.
Yeah, definitely. Just the name, you know, always get a lot of questions about it.
Sakura, not Yiming.
Yeah.
Come on, I'm Sakura. That's the actual name.
Yeah, stage name, maybe not yet.
Stage name, yeah. Yeah, maybe not yet. Soon. Okay, yeah. So Dare to Finance, both of you are financial advisors because that's what Darren said he is.
Yes, so it started off with just me being a financial advisor. So as we progress, you know, as I put more focus onto the software building side, that's where I couldn't manage the workload for in terms of the financial services. That's why I convinced Sakura to join me as an advisor.
But Darren, you know the tech stuff as well.
Yeah, so I was a computing student and also an advisor at the site. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, tech and finance is a good combination of skills.
Yeah, right. I guess.
Yeah, so that financial service side, I guess, came really in silos with everything we did. Because a lot of people had also reached out to us. And, you know, it works all together as a content hub and also being able to provide that service. So when Darren initially was the only financial advisor. The load was a lot on him. Mm. Yeah, and everything that I had to go through him in terms of the professional advice. So yeah, it was really handy that at least I got my certifications, got certified. So everything is a lot easier now. We share the load. And yeah, I think that's how we started to expand a little bit more. Mm. Yeah, and Dare to Finance in itself has been exactly 2 years now.
So 2020, is that a COVID project? Or you all have been planning for a while, just that you all launched during 2020?
It's around COVID period, but we have been planning it before that. So I was a financial advisor before I started Dare to Finance, right? So I didn't really like how insurance was being sold, right? It was very product driven.
Coming from a financial advisor, you didn't like the way insurance was being sold. Okay.
I mean, like, we call ourselves financial advisor. The term itself, it feels like when you seek out a financial advisor, you can get some financial advice. Then in the end, the person sell insurance, right? So that doesn't match. So why we created Dare to Finance was to really give an education approach first. That's why if you look at our Instagram page, right, even though we are financial advisor, I think only a very small part of it is about insurance. Right. In fact, at the beginning, right, they don't know we are an insurance agent. So what we did was we have an annual feedback form, and then we realized that a lot of people don't know we are insurance, we are financial advisor, we have financial services. Mm. So that's when we started to be a bit more loud on it. But at the start, insurance wasn't even part of the focus, I would say.
So what made you think that you don't like the way insurance was being sold?
Because the traditional way was just basically we have to, usually when we approach a prospect, right, beforehand, we will just try pitch about the product now. Why is this endowment bank good? But most of the time, we wouldn't bother to find out what the client already have, because for obvious reason, the client might not even know what they have. And then if you try to insist on the client or the prospect to show you what they have, right, sometimes they might just lose interest.
Yeah.
So a lot of financial advice, before they even understand a client, they'll try to secure the client first.
Mm.
So I feel that shouldn't be the way, right? So that's why we wanted to be more systematic in our approach. So that's why if you go and see our Instagram page, right, we have a pinned post on how we do our insurance services. So it's a very systematic approach whereby whoever that's interested will send us their list of portfolio. We have a team to review it first, and then we propose if there's any insurance gap or if there's any insurance that they can cut off.
Do you think that the process is reversed in the sense that I should be understanding your needs and requirements first before I sell you the appropriate products that's suitable for you, but instead I have an incentive to sell certain products because of maybe higher commissions and incentives that drive my behavior as a financial advisor? Would you say that's a fair statement? Or there's more details to it?
I think it really depends. I mean, in the end, it depends on the individual, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are always good people and bad people in all industries.
Yeah.
So even, and there are very strict regulation on financial advisor. So meaning to say, if let's say you have sold a lot of plans to a lot of clients, like after maybe 1 or 2 years, they realize they bought the wrong plan and then they cancel. Mm-hmm. Actually, that will have a very bad consequences on the agent. They might even lose their license. So there are a lot of strict restrictions in place to ensure that the advisor don't missell.
Because ultimately, all financial advisors in Singapore, they're very much regulated by MAS.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to follow these rules, and it definitely doesn't look good on the financial advisor as well if you're selling something that people give up on after a while. With all that in mind as well, we knew that a lot of people are not even very sure about what are the products they have. So we wanted to create a system that's systematic for us, but also systematic for them as well. So they know what they have first, and then understand what they have first, then they can understand, okay, maybe these are the places I'm lacking, then I want to seek advice for it. Yeah, so that's where we come in. So it really helps us also that we do a thorough evaluation of what they have. Then, when they understand, they are better on board with, getting different products and understanding how to better their financial health, which is exactly what Dare to Finance is about, right? That initiative, that first push we did, to even put a pin post on our Instagram. So that essentially means, on our profile, you'll always have that post above, right? So yeah, people now know that we do have that service, we offer that service, and we're very systematic and proper about it.
Since both of you are financial advisors and we talk about financial advisors during our podcast as well, so do you think that financial advisors get a bad rep?
Naturally, well, yes. Yeah. Right?
And Darren, you brought up, I would say, black sheep, right? I mean, every industry. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot harder for us because the black sheep is the stigma is already there. And I would say there's a group of very good financial advisors that's trying very hard to fight a stigma. But once, just one agent that is not doing his job and then make on news, the whole thing we have to start over again. So it's almost like a few good advisor is going against the whole industry. which is a very difficult change, I would say. Yeah.
Well, especially if it's about money, it's very sensitive, right? I'm handing my money to you, and then, oh, okay, what's going on with it, right?
And, and sometimes it's not even the advisor might not be recommending the bad product, but it's what's the best for the client at the point of time. A few years later, maybe the client forget why he or she even buy in the first place.
Yeah.
Right, then they seek opinion and they realize, oh, that's not what they want now. So in the end, they put the blame on the advisor and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. And it's easy to also, you know, when you look at insurances and all these likes of products, they are just heavily worded documents, right?
Yeah. And terms and conditions. Yeah.
It's only normal that a layman is not going to look back at that. So that's why you always need that assistant, which often is that financial advisor. And if that person didn't explain thoroughly or had explained thoroughly, but naturally we forget, you know, it's easy to kind of say, hey, you know, I don't understand that product. So that's why there's also the importance of being firstly understanding when you're purchasing and keeping notes, and that financial advisor has to come in and check in time to time, you know, like, hey, do you remember what this was about? So it's always aligned. When that misalignment happens, that's when, you know, both sides may turn against each other. So a very simple analogy that we often talk about is that, say, you know, you're at a really nice restaurant. It's your first time going there. Perhaps you may ask the waiter there, like, hey, what's the chef recommendation? You know, you don't know if it's really the best food dish, food dish there.
Or if I like it.
Yeah, whether you like it or are they just going to recommend something that has the highest, you know,
profit or the least budget. Or the least popular item on the menu.
And maybe they have a lot of clear that. You never know. So I guess it applies to many things in life. And that's how you put a lot of emphasis on, okay, if I'm going to offer you a dish, let me find out what are the things you like first.
Do you like something savory?
What's
your mood for today? Okay.
So that first understanding what they need, what they want, is so important. And that's why we put so much emphasis on that. So yeah, I guess like the analogy makes it a little bit easier to understand. But I mean, it always goes back to what do they need? What do they want? And how can, you know, this outsourced person help you with that.
Help us understand, what do financial advisors actually do?
Right, financial advisor is such a broad term, right? And right now, a lot of insurance agents label themselves financial advisors.
Well, the story that we always hear is that insurance agents got a bad rap. I mean, this term insurance agents, and then they've switched to financial advisors.
Like rebrand, right?
Rebrand, which sounds a bit more broad because previously it was just insurance, right? Yeah. But Darren, you also have to sell insurance under your portfolio. Do you have to?
Yeah. So actually, to me, insurance agent and financial advisor is essentially the same thing.
Okay.
It's just how the advisor choose to position themselves.
Okay.
Yeah. So on the JD job description, like, being a financial advisor basically means you just have to recommend products that suit the client needs. So that's all it is. So it's essentially the sales job. Right? You recommend product that you represent to what you think fits the client need. So, but what we are trying to move towards is we are trying to move towards more of the value advisory side of things. So I mean to say, we want to be able to provide advice and advice beyond just insurance. Right. So that's why we have a lot of very close relationship with our client. So for example, when they are planning for a big purchase, right? They will look for us and, oh, do you think I'm able to afford this? So that's where we have a session with them, look through their finances, and then give them some advice, whether our two cents on whether they can afford certain stuff. So that's the direction that we think we should move towards in terms of financial advisory industry.
Because right now, I think a lot of people have their relationship with financial advisors as, you know, okay, I need to buy insurance, I approach you. But like, shouldn't it also be a lot broader, where if I have to make any financial decisions, this is the person that I'm going to go to. So that's what we aim to achieve, so that we build this lifelong relationship where, you know, if you need to make even the slightly small purchase, like, hey, Sakura, do you think I can afford it? Because you're like my go-to man, right? Yeah, so that's that kind of thing, that's a relationship that we want to make the ideal. And we want to work towards building with, you know, our base.
So I think we think of the sales process when we think about a financial advisor. Yeah. Like, okay, I need this product. You sell it to me. I sign it and that's it. Of course, there's a lot of things you'll do on the back end, I'm sure. But you're talking about this process whereby I understand your needs. Like, okay, let's say I want to buy a house. And this process of financial planning might not necessarily lead me to buy a product from you, right? Because I'm just planning my finances, as the name suggests. But you'll do that as well?
Yeah, in fact, that's where our tool comes in, right? Okay. So our software that we built late last year was something to help them visualize these goals a little bit better.
Okay.
So whether it's like a house purchase, or say whether it's like something smaller, like maybe a wedding, whatever it is, these cost money. And it's hard for a normal person to see how much impact it makes. Yeah, so we kind of put it on a visualization. So there's all the charts and pretty stuff, so you better understand them. Mm. And yeah, we guide them through that process, because if we don't, then what's it going to be, like a really complex Excel sheet? Or perhaps you might not even go to the Excel sheet. We guide them step by step based on, you know, their financial knowledge first, and then we work it through with them. Yeah, and plans do change and, you know, evolve through time. So then it's always updating it. Okay, how can we better approach this thing that we're working towards together?
Yeah, but like what you mentioned, like there are some cases whereby we do all this process with them and then they end up not buying anything.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just part of the process. Some people end up buying something.
Can I approach a financial advisor to do that? Like, is there a value that a financial advisor provides?
I would say not all financial advisors would be keen to provide that.
Got it.
But we are trying to change the industry such that it's able to do.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I mean, if you can form a closely knitted relationship with me, then I'll keep coming to you. And next time when I need a product, or if my particular goal leads me to buy a specific product, then I'll think of you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that's a value that y'all can provide. Yeah.
In fact, that's something that happens a lot at our platform, because a lot of people approach us and DM us through Instagram with their situation, you know, just getting perspectives on, you know, how they can better their situation. And it often doesn't lead to a sales, but, you know, it's okay, because we want to build that platform so you have someone to consult and you have someone professional to consult. And we're not going to charge in that sense, but, and we're not going to sell you something, because if it's going to be a sales and like pursuit of, you know, just selling you something, then they will just be like every other, you know, a black sheep, we like to say. Yeah, so that's something that we just want to switch and want to position ourselves to be, hey, you know what, we just want to be the people that you can consult, you know, even if you're not going to buy anything.
So what are some questions that you get in your DMs and perhaps in your job as a financial advisor as well?
Oh, I think because of the age group that we have, so we have a bit of late 20s down all the way to late 30s. I think we grew a lot with our followers. So initially when we began the platform, we had a lot of fresh graduates. Then now maybe they're already like working. So yeah, now they start, a very common question we get is, how can I better help my parents with retirement? Because, you know, maybe they're relying on them or, you know, they feel the weight now that they're working and they need to provide for their parents. That's one common one. So, you know, how can I convince my parents a little bit, or like, you know, how can I communicate with them better, talk about finances, you know, very general stuff that often I think an average financial advisor wouldn't get, but because we're a little finance, we do. So that's one big topic, navigating.
These are not easy questions to answer. It really depends on the individual situation, right?
Exactly. So all these take, you know, first off, always starts off with like a Instagram DM, right, where they like that a little bit of anonymity, whatever that comes with that. Yeah, and then, you know, if they trust us enough, it often it's just a little bit more of like, okay, then let us help you calculate a little bit more, like tell us more details, you know, get your mom on board, you know, whatever it is. And often if it's in a very tight situation, you know, it's just really talking with them.
Okay. So apart from how can I help my parents, career-related questions, I suppose?
Actually, oddly, we do get a lot of career-related questions as well.
Because you mentioned fresh grads, that's what I think about.
Yes, and when, because this past 2 years, you know, there were a lot of traineeships going around, right? So we had a lot of people who were in traineeships trying to transition into full-time job. How can I better upskill myself? You know, very broad questions. And that's why I think a lot of our content also revolves not just on the personal finance aspect, but beyond that, a little bit of like adulting, a little bit of lifestyle. You know, how can you better upskill yourself? How can you better be a better self? I feel like Data Finance is not just a personal finance platform anymore. It just revolves, it's like a whole ecosystem around it. you know, that explains why we get so broad questions as well in our DMs.
So not just finance, because finance is so related to life, which means your parents, your job, you know, this is what I like to do. Now, what do you think people have such questions? Like, you say broad, right? General questions. Like, they can't find all this information online, it seems. Like, they have to go to a DM, you know, to technically a stranger, someone they don't know, like, to ask something about their own life, right? You know? Yeah, like, why do you think that is the case?
I think it's very hard to find, like, advice online that you can relate to your situation, because everyone's situation is so different, right? You could read an article that is similar to your situation, but one thing that is different can affect the whole conclusion. Right, so, and always, you will always see like a disclaimer at the end of any financial article.
NFA, not financial advice.
Right, and do your own research, stuff like that. Yeah. So, but they are doing their own research, right, when you read the articles. So, it's a bit counterintuitive. Yeah. So that's why I think like they still need someone to talk to. I think it's almost like marriage counseling, right? Like, you can just talk to your husband, but in the end, you need someone there to facilitate the talk. Yeah. Right, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so Darren, you have your own take on all this information online, financial content, you know, people asking you to DYOR. And technically, you all can give financial advice because you're licensed too, right? But you mentioned before in a separate conversation that you think people, it's hard to get satisfactory answers online to all these questions, right? And that's because it's not, you know, customized to your unique situation. Right? And it depends, right?
Yeah. So that's why also we wanted to build a software that is able to give a bit more personalized advice, right? Because in the end, in terms of personal finance, it's all about whether I can afford this lifestyle, whether I can afford this and afford that. So all this actually can be put into math, like ones and zeros. Of course, it's subject to change, but having a plan that is subject to change is better than having a no plan at all. Right, so that's basically what we are working towards, trying to build a software that can help user better achieve their finances.
Okay, so using tech to help out.
Yeah, that will be more scalable. If not, like, it's very time consuming for us to like, you know, reply to all DMs. So we try to do it just once a month, right? And then it really took up the whole two days, two nights.
I think initially when we started it off, this, you know, how we started it was, you know how Instagram has that feature where you can ask a question?
Yeah.
So we use that, and then we asked them, like, you know, you can ask us anything, you know, not just personal finance related. And we realized there were so many people who wanted to get their questions answered. And we realized that, hey, they're not always personal finance, and they just want someone to speak to give perspectives.
Yeah.
And that first time, we really took maybe a full 3 day, really, because you know when you go to the DMs, they just get really lengthy, and then you know naturally the conversation goes forward. Yeah, so it took up a lot of our time, and then once we did it a couple of times, we're like, okay, you know, we can't be doing this all the time. As much as we want to help them, we need to come up with something so that we can better help them. I mean, between Darren and I, Darren's more of like a mathy guy, so you know he loves the math of things, and he was like, okay, and he already had that tech background, so he. Because he was studying at the initial start when Dare to Finance started, and he had the expertise of building this software. So we just kind of leveraged on it, and he built that software. And we were able to really help people, not just in words, but showing them how you can really achieve different things in life that you are planning for. And I think that has helped us a lot in helping people and actually streamlining our processes as well. Yeah, so this software is called Financial Pathway, but we started using it late last year with people, and it's been very interesting because we really get to meet people and understand them a lot better. And what I love most about it is we get a lot of female followers, and they like to sign up for it naturally, but they always drag their boyfriends along because naturally it's like, you know, financial planning is not an individual thing, right? If you're gonna get together with someone, you want it aligned with your partner. So I often see, and I do these sessions a lot, more so than Darren. I meet them, you know, I always see the guy. At first, he's a little bit uninterested. He's like, you can clearly tell I was dragged in by my girlfriend. But, you know, it's very interesting. And then they start talking about, starting these conversations about down to even how many kids do we want, you know, because kids are expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you hear these conversations, I feel good seeing it, you know, that we're helping to help start these conversations between young couples also. I mean, you know, whether they do become an item and they go forward with that, you know, it's okay. It's just starting these conversations, talking about this. Because I realize these personal finance topics is a tough conversation to start. And yeah, and it's also something that I often ask people, like, hey, you know, just curious, like, do you talk about these stuff with your friends? And often it's like not really. Being just a platform on Instagram to just have such content and talk about it with people and have people consult us about things, I think it's a good safe space almost for them to start talking about it with their parents, with their friends. And yeah, I think that's a really great feeling to have. It's a win for me.
I think it's very hard to do financial planning because it's hard to think in terms of decades.
Yeah.
Because what you want changes, right, at different stages in your life. You might think you need X amount per month, but when you have kids, it's a different story. That's why financial advisors always ask, like, do you intend to get married? Do you want to have kids? How many kids? Your worldview, your perspective on money might change. You might want to give your kids a better life when you see the cute baby in your arms. You know, and then your expenses might increase because of that. So it's really hard to predict. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's so hard. So the whole thing about financial pathways, I think, is for us to think about, okay, like, I want a house. How much must I save and invest? Or even I want to travel. You know, I want to have kids and all that. Right, and so you have the tech side, and you'll have the content side as well. So, and one of the things that finance talks about is about defining your own reach, right? So, could you tell us a bit more about that?
A lot of Singaporeans want to be rich, right? But when you question them, right, like how much is enough, right? Usually they don't really have a number. They might say a few million, right? But what in our opinion, right? Everyone have a own definition of rich, right? So it really depends on in the end, being rich is having like the options to do what you want in life, right? And certain stuff in life, you might not need that option. So for example, if you love to travel, so you want to have that option to travel around. But if food don't give you as much happiness, then you don't really need to have the option to eat good food every day, right? So it's about trying to define which area of your life gives you the most happiness and then calculate a sum of like, you know, roughly how much you need to maintain a lifestyle. So for example, if you want to have yearly travel, then you have to calculate how much you want to spend on yearly travel. If you are able to reach that amount passively, right, essentially you are rich already. So some people having like, you know, maybe 100k is enough. To some, maybe you need a few million. So it really depends.
You define it as having the options, right?
Correct.
And focusing on the areas of life that are of most interest to you.
Yeah.
Is that, how would you define it, Sakura?
Yeah, I think when we're talking about and defining your rich is something that we often say at Dare to Finance, right? It's true, everyone have their definition. What we like to advocate is, if right now you're not sure, think about like the smaller goals you have, whether it's, you know, being able to spend this $100 every month for a really nice dessert. You know, start small, it's fine. And then as you go, you will realize, hey, you know what? I personally like this. And then expand on that and set a budget for it. And then with that numbers, then you can start working towards, okay, then in 20 years time, 50 years time, whatever, you know, how much would that amount be? And is this is what I want to work towards. So yeah, of course it comes with being able to have the options to explore. But if you're someone that's a little bit more clear about what you want, then it's just really working towards it. So yeah, I guess it's a tough question, right? Like, and it puts you at a spot and you have to really think about it. What's the thing that you want? And if not, then don't limit yourself.
Well, you just shared addresses the part about it's very hard to think in terms of decades. So you got to start small, start somewhere. Like, you don't know food is of no interest to you until you like eat a lot of good food and then, okay, like, actually food, whatever. As long as I can feel my stomach, I'm fine. Oh, but I really love traveling. So that's what you want to focus on. Yeah, it's still hard. Okay, I think it's okay to change your goals as and when, right? Because your perspectives will change, your circumstances will change. But there's this thing about shifting goalposts, right? People don't feel secure. Like, I have X amount of money if that's how I want to define it, or I know I want to allocate this amount of money to different areas of my life. But when I reach it, you know, there's always this lack of security. How do we deal with this emotional aspect?
I think that is why it's very important to have a constant check-in with yourself, right? And then really be very truthful to yourself on which area in your life really bring you happiness, right? Like, when we were still a student, right? When we you have the money to, you know, buy a upsized meal in McDonald's, you might feel very happy already. But as you grow up, like, you will feel that, like, oh, maybe that's not what I like anymore. But then there was a time that you like that, right? So it basically trying to keep your lifestyle inflation in check.
And do a check-in on, hey, what's relevant in my life as well, you know? Because as you grow older, you realize you need, perhaps you really genuinely need certain things in life. So have buffer to at least afford these needs that grow with age as well.
Yeah.
Yes. So I mean, at the start, you may feel like, hey, I don't want kids. And then what if you meet someone and you're like, oh, now I want kids, and you want like 5 kids, then how are you going to afford it, right? So it's being realistic also. Once you, you know, once that happens, check in like, okay, do I have enough resources to afford 5 kids? Mm. Whatever, yeah. And so it's always having that, I like to say, just do a yearly check-in is enough. Mm. You know, it still keeps your goals very relevant.
Yeah.
So do that check-in, and also check-in in terms of emotional state. You know, what do I want? And also like, actual financial check-in, do I have enough to afford the wants and needs?
And that's why it's important to plan with a buffer as well.
Mm.
Yeah, because if you just plan just nice, when the goalpost shift, you have to essentially start from zero, right?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So you all have experience working with fresh graduates, and of course, on your site, you all have a lot of all these comments, DMs. You all understand people who are starting out on their financial journey, what are they, you know, thinking about? What are the questions that they ask? So before we wrap up this conversation, you know, any last piece of advice for people starting out in their financial journey?
I would say take small step. Don't have to necessarily compare yourself to people that are already there, right? For you, your first step might be saving extra $10 per month. Right, even though that's might be a very small step for someone else, but it's these small steps that can encourage you to take another step forward, lah. So don't be discouraged by small steps.
Yeah. Mine would just be like, it's always better to start than to, you know, like be overwhelmed with what's ahead. So yeah, even if it's a small step, just take that small step. And if you need help, you know, be vocal about it. Say you need help, and there are always help around you. Mm. You know, whether it's your friends or your parents or whoever it might be, or maybe just your colleagues. Mm. You know, reaching out to someone that can help you, even in the slightest bit, is always a step forward. Yeah. So I think, personally, one thing that I struggled with is being able to voice out and be like, hey, you know, I need help. So, you know, and in the early years, it's tough to overcome this fact that, hey, you know, like, not everything is in your control. When you need, just voice it out, you know. And then that's already one step forward.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stay tuned all the way after this quick note for our personal money question segment. Before that, I hope you've learned something useful today. Join our Telegram group, follow us on our socials, and check out thefinancialcoconut.com.
What have been your best and worst investments? It need not be a financial one.
Off the top of my head, I want to say, like, even this business in itself, like, it is an investment of time and money and a lot of effort. But when Dare to Finance first started, I was not too much of a financial junkie. Like, you know, I was maybe like quite a beginner, and I didn't know a lot of things. So it was an investment, one of my best investments in myself, because I learned a lot, and it pushes me every day. That every day that I meet people, you know, sometimes I'm given tough questions that I might not know, and that pushes me to be like, hey, you know what? You know, I have so much to learn. And it's in a positive light, because it's also that people are looking at me and counting on me to give them fairly good advice, right?
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, of course I'm not an expert at finance, and I'm not perfect, definitely. So it pushes me to learn and also upskill myself in every way possible. And also because as a startup founder, I'm very limited on time also. So time management is something that I had to really manage very, very well. And yeah, so I guess best investments, and somehow also, I wouldn't want to
two
say
two sides of the same coin.
I wouldn't want to say a worst investment, but like the thing is, you know, there's always that trade-off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I had done something else, I could have been earning bigger bucks, or whatever, right? And yeah, and maybe I could have been spending a lot more time with other people, but it's all that. You lose a little bit, you earn a bit, right? So there's a lot of growth within this 2 years for myself. Personal growth, financial growth. But yeah, it comes at a trade-off.
I want to ask a bit more about, so you mentioned you're not a financial junkie, but you got into this role as a financial advisor. So what happened? What happened to make you realize that, okay, I need to understand more about finance?
So I think the first year that finance started off, I was more of working on the creatives and, you know, not too much the financial side. So I was helping create content with Darren. And through making that content, I learned a lot. You know, he gave me all the structures of it. I made it like look slightly nicer. Yeah. And so through that, I learned so much. And he was also the first person that taught me about, like, I was never like a big planner on finances. But he was like, hey, you know, like now that you started working and stuff, you're getting a good stream of income. Like, what are you going to do about it? I was letting it sit in my bank. Yeah, to be very honest.
She was my client, by the way.
Yeah. Well, we knew each other from way back. Yeah.
Aaron told you to dare to finance.
Yeah, he was the one.
Something about finance.
He was the one who helped me, you know, sort out my finances. Okay. And was a good financial advisor for me, right? Was that point of contact. And I decided to be like, okay, I need to get my shit together. Mm. Yeah. So then I started investing. You know, it wasn't much, but it was a start. And then And with investing, it's always building up that confidence, right? And having someone like to kind of be like to check in on was very helpful. And I thought, okay, like I can, you know, that motivated me to be that person for someone as well. You know, that's why I started off not interested as a financial junkie, but you know, now it's once you start it, you start getting curious about so many things. And I think that's what pushes me to be like, okay, I want to find out this and that, and it's never ending. Mm. Yeah, I think that is my journey, I guess.
All right, Darren, best and worst investment?
I would say it's probably my degree. I mean, I spent quite a fair bit on my degree, right? In the end, like a computing degree. In the end, like I choose to become a financial advisor.
Yeah.
So that's. But then again, if I didn't had gone for the computing degree, I wouldn't have created the software, right? Mm. So yeah, it's the best and worst. And I guess after going through the whole degree, I realized I could have learned it online. but again, if I didn't go through a degree, I wouldn't know what to Google online to learn it as well. So it's kind of like a
I think that's the case with a lot of people. And even for myself, at the start, you know you need to do something about it, but you don't know what you don't know. And you need someone to set the direction for you. Yeah, and I think this applies to everyone that we've met also, whether it's like starting off in like your investing journey, like where do I begin, right? So yeah, you might need a little bit of guidance at the start. So that's why that call for help sometimes is very important. And once you set the direction, once you get started, then you'll be very naturally very curious about many things. And that's where you can always self-initiate learning. Yeah. And
you need a framework for thinking about it.
Yeah.
Mm. So just like your degree gives you a framework on how to Google it, right? Yeah, so that if not, you're lost. Mm. You know, finances as well. Like if you're starting out, it's a mess, but you know, you start to have some basic principles, and that's when you can start, you know, finding out which information is relevant to you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. What is something that you spend that is under $100 that has been a game changer for you? So helpful to your own life.
I would say for me, it's $100 was the first amount I put into investment. Mm. Right. So from since young till like around 18, 19, I've always been a saver. Right. In fact, like when I was 18 years old, right, I wanted to open a brokerage account. So I went down to a branch. But then they don't have all these like they asked me to fill out some assessment, and I filled the assessment. So they asked me to attend some seminar, and then that was too much of a barrier for me back then. So I waited a few years, and then like, you know, all the friends around me haven't started investing yet. But it's they always say, oh, you need to monitor the market every day, stuff like that. So that deterred me from like actually investing. So until like one day, I just decided, okay, I'm just going to put $100 into a brokerage account and then see how it goes. So from then, I realized, okay, actually, it's not that difficult, right? And then, of course, I learned along the way. So that $100 has been a game changer for me.
So about starting out, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so the $100 was in the brokerage account for a while? Like, when did you make your first investment, though?
Oh, right away, in fact.
Right away. Oh, what was that? I'm just curious. SingBoast. Because during that time,
I believe it's iFast. iFast.
That's a good one. Mine is, I guess mine applies to life. Mine is really just, oh my god, this is going to sound really lame, but it's just having my iCloud subscription. No, but really it's about, I think initially I didn't want to spend that bit of money. Mm. And just FYI, I bought like the 1 TB storage, all right? So something that I constantly face is my iPhone keeps popping out of the storage pop up, right? But my reluctance to just pay for that bit of like $4.
I know.
It's just a
I can just save it to a thumb drive, hard drive or something,
yeah,
right?
You know? And the thing is, I'll never do it. You know, I'll never plug in to my computer and then do a thumb drive or like HDD, whatever, right? Yeah, so just that small effort of outsourcing it to and just spending that $4, just it's a game changer. Mm. I mean, it's not even $100, but I'm just talking about that bit of like $4 is enough to make my whole life a lot more seamless and across different devices. I mean, I'm not plugged, like, it's not a plug for Apple, but really, like,
I understand because I'm sold by finance books to, you know, cut your recurring expenses. So every bit of recurring expense to me is a sin, committing a crime. Like, you know, I'm managing my finances as well. And then $4, iCloud,
I also procrastinated. And you feel like they add up, right? Yeah. I mean, but it's just keeping, it's true, you know, you check in on all your different recurring expenses. But with iCloud, it's something that I use heavily. Mm. You know, it's quite validated.
I mean, Apple is good at keeping us in the ecosystem.
I am entirely in the ecosystem. So
there you go.
Yeah, so that makes all the more the fact that I need that storage space. And after I made that subscription, I never got that pop up. You know, my workflow isn't interrupted.
Yeah.
It's a good investment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
you take all the photos you want and all the
all my files.
All your files, right? That you need for work and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. So
that's not lame because I have a guest who says YouTube premium subscription.
I guess if you can validate it.
And I will consider a Spotify subscription to be pretty helpful as well. I mean, because I'm listening to podcasts and all that.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, last question for you. You know, books, websites, podcasts, blogs, so much content, so much information online. Could you recommend Manner, some things that you are learning from? A place that you're learning from?
I don't have a specific a place that I look for. Basically, what I do is whenever I subscribe to like Medium, like your podcast, right? So every time I heard of something that I'm not very familiar with, so I'll go YouTube and Google and then just watch everything that
I think YouTube related. Is very underrated. Yeah. And I mean, that's the reason why there is like, we joke about it, like YouTube education. A lot of the things I learn are from YouTube, and this is free content, so you know, I've learned a lot of financial tips from YouTube content creators, and not just, you know, beyond just Singapore borders. And personally, I had my whole YouTube phase and I would binge watch on like YouTube videos and stuff, but I do like podcasts because I'm on commute a lot, and it may not have my 100% attention, but it's a good thing to plug in and, you know, do your work or whatever you need to do. And, you know, you still absorb a little bit of that bits of information. I feel like I went through different phases of like, I have my podcast phase and then like it was on and off and stuff. But right now I'm back into my podcast phase and, you know, it's true, right? Like
right now is the podcast phase?
Yeah, right now is my podcast phase.
What's something that you're listening to recently? Or what do you last listen to?
I have Investor Roundtable. That's one of like more a little bit more specialized one. I also have I share it with our team a lot, with our group. But it's this podcast called Dr. Huberman Podcast. I don't know if it rings a bell, but that one is really just on a weekly basis, and that was a little bit more in depth into like really bettering your workflow. Yeah, so really podcasts in itself have different, you know, focuses, right?
Yeah.
And being able to select from those, and I have my go-tos, being able to keep up to date also with, say, like with Investor Roundtable, they keep up to date with news. So even if, you know, you don't have to dedicate like a YouTube video you need to watch through, but rather it's just like on the go, you listen as you need. And also, okay, another one that I personally like is Twitter, because you're really updated. And it's just little bits of information, right? And it doesn't require much to read. And if need be, you can always expand on it elsewhere. So you get the top headlines or like top view on like the information that you need. And then thereafter, when you have the time, go deep dive into the topic that you're interested in or that news that you're interested in. A lot of social media platforms that I just like dropped here. But, you know, just having all these different elements that keep you updated in the very different ways, you know, not just in one aspect of life of like finance, but also like if you need be a little bit of like support in terms of like your lifestyle and your workflow. Yeah, that balance of, I guess, life and work is very important. Integrating and finding your own balance, you know, what feels right for you. Yeah, so it's not just about, it's really about upskilling yourself as a person as well.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.